Welcome to the Humans and AI Podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor La Orga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Great. Joaquin, very nice to meet you. Thank you for joining the Humans and AI Podcast. I found your journey, your entrepreneurial journey, actually very interesting. Let's get to know you a bit more. So, Joaquin, you've been in this, I have to say something. I know that you are one of the co-founders and now you're the CEO of FreePic. I have to say that I've been using FreePic for a long time. So I've been a user. So when I was like, wow, you're the, that was so funny. Like, it was, that's so interesting. But before going to into more in depth in this part, I would like to get to know you more on your background. Okay, so for what I've understood, you studied computer engineering, then you've been doing all collecting content or the images, videos, long before FreePic actually. You've co-founded something before. I forgot the name actually. I think it was Panoramio or something like that. Yes, so could you please take us back a little bit? How did it start and why you have such a, you love to do that part of the design and creative with the images? It's very interesting.
So first of all, very happy to be here, Flor. So you went back to university. Actually, I wanted to use and to learn how to use computers since I was a kid. Like, even before I got my first computer, I don't know why, but I had that itch that I wanted a computer. I finally got one when I was 8 years old. And of course, me and my brothers were playing video games all the time with it. Okay. But very often the computer broke down and the only thing that the disk was not loading, it was a disk and not a cassette. And the only thing that we could do then is to code. Okay. So there were long periods of time where we could only like code video games to play them. We did that. At a pretty early age, I learned to code. Then I went to university. I actually did fundamental physics and computer science. I did both of them. And when I finished, I started working as a software engineer initially. But pretty soon, like a friend of mine from high school, he got me into a startup that he was working on. A few months later, that startup got acquired by eBay in Spain. And then we started a new startup, which is Panoramio. And it was putting together photos and Google Maps. It was right exactly when Google Maps released their first version. So for those who don't remember it or were not there, the first version of Google Maps, you could get on a map, the US and UK. And this is it. Everything else, it was completely blue ocean. So it was a very American-centric way of looking at the world. But it was amazing because you could scroll. It was very novel. Like you could zoom in and get satellite images. And very quickly, we got the idea to put together two things that we love, which is looking at the maps, being able to go anywhere, and photography. We love to take photos. So we got the idea of putting the photos in the map where you took them. And it was a way to supplement this way of traveling, virtually traveling through the world. So you could not only see the satellite image where you were, but also different photographs of the places where we had been in the past. And we opened it to anyone that wanted to contribute images, and it became very popular. And that's where originally where Google Maps and Google Earth sourced all the photos for their products. So we got integrated in Google Earth, we got integrated in Google Maps. Google acquired our company. We were two founders and a cloud designer that we hired. The three of us moved to Zurich. I spent there 3 years. And then I came back to Spain because I had that itch again of creating something new. And that's when we started FreePic.
Wow, incredible story that you've been acquired for the big giants like Google. And it was like, what? That's, well, like you guys did an impressive job, I have to say. So talking a little bit about free pick. You said something that I found very interesting. You said that the decision to embrace AI, as it was the most difficult but transformative moment of your career. Can you share a little bit about this?
Yes, I would say before, at the beginning, my first reaction to AI, and I think many people are at this stage today, is this is not good enough. Okay. And a bit skeptical, like I thought, okay, and it's not going to get good enough, or at least not anytime soon. Like the gap between a great image, like a great photo, and what generative models could do back in 2021, 2020, in my mind, it was just the big. I didn't thought it was going to get so much better so quickly. So I was a bit skeptical of the technology, but that changed when DALL-E 2 got out. So with DALL-E 2, I started to see images that already had some commercial value. And at that point, it's like, well, wait a second, this is not any longer like a labs thing. This is something of real value right now, today. Okay. At that point, I understood that it was just going to get better and better much faster than what I initially expected. And that the whole future of the company was going to be in a different path than what I thought originally. So it was difficult because initially I didn't even knew how we were going to transform the company to travel down that path. Okay, we were pretty good at what we were doing before. Just create great content or acquire great content to give it to our users, have a great search engine, have a great web page. But what do you even need to be good at AI? I didn't even know. So do we need a team of researchers? Do we need... At the end, it turned out that being able to churn a good product, being able to create a great product using AI technologies, it was pretty similar being able to do a great service using existing technologies pre-AI, okay? And that's something that we knew how to do. So we just assume that we will get, soon enough, open source versions or API-enabled versions of what you had on DALL-E 2, okay? And pretty soon we got Stable Diffusion 1.5. We started to get more and more models. Some of them private, like Midjourney, some of them public, like Stable Diffusion. And that opened a path for us. Like we were able to take that model, Stable Diffusion, put it on Freepik, and then iterate. And then ask users what is not working. And sometimes we could not help them because it was a flaw of the model and we could not change it. But sometimes it was in our hands. So, okay, I want to store the images that I created. I want to be able to search them. I want to be able to select a different visual style for the image. And we made it transparent for them. We made it easier and easier for them. We started to iterate. And pretty soon, Freepik changed from being a library of assets to being a suite that is enabled by AI technologies to create and to edit images and videos. And that's where we are today.
Yeah, because I've been using Freepik for a few years, actually. I think that before all the AI that you guys made a change. So because, well, it's been a global leader in stock content. And now, as you say, you're using generative AI tools to create users can create their own videos or content with the help of AI. So do you have any use cases from user that it came to you guys or feedback from any user that said, wow, this is like any story that you could share with us?
From users that say, this is amazing, but before AI or after AI?
It can be before, one example, and one after. Maybe that's easier for to understand.
Oh, there are many. Like, the ones that I cherish the most is when people come to me telling that we actually enable their career. That's pretty powerful. There are people, I remember one guy who told me that thanks to the icons in Flaticon, which is a sister project for Freepik, they're now integrated in Freepik. It's a project that we also started from scratch. So thanks to the icons that we have in the platform, he was able to create much more professional presentations. That gave him confidence to go higher in his career, and that gave like his superiors also the opinion that he was churning like very high quality presentations. And he, I'm pretty sure that it was his work, but he attributes a big part of it to the visual quality of the presentations, and he attributes a big part of it thanks to the icons that we have on the platform. So there are people really that got a career thanks to Freepik. And not only on the consumer side, but also on the producer side. Because many people working on Indonesia and Taiwan made a living thanks to Freepik sending images. And those are cases that really warm my heart. After AI, it's been expanding. It's not necessarily the same use cases, but I'm going to share one that is talking to a user that also works for us. Okay. It's a lady. She studied photography. And she told me that before AI, she had like very good ideas to what she wanted as images, that she could not create them because gear was so expensive that it was, she said, okay, it's maybe 15K, 20K, like the lights, the cameras have top notch, plus bringing the people, the makeup, all the time. So she could not create the images that she wanted to create. She wanted to emulate like some photographer in Korea, some like creating some surrealistic images, and it was just not possible. And with AI, she could get like all those images into reality. I think in both cases, we have been enabling or helping people make real what it's in their mind or elevating the game. Okay. And that's why I think there is, for us in use case, there's no pre-AI and post-AI. It's been the same mission before and after.
Great. I'm also saw something that you shared on your social media about, you say something like, oh, AI was a hard no in Hollywood. Like in Hollywood, nobody will kind of, but now the shift is undeniable. So studios are reaching out. The change has been fast and clear. So there, I guess that you meant like studios are reaching out. It's like reaching out to you, to your company, Freepik? Or yeah, could you explain a little bit about this?
Of course, we only have visibility into what happens in our company. I have much more limited visibility into what happens in other companies. If I have to sum it up, I will say that companies are like people a little bit, okay, in a way. And companies, they are afraid of being the first one, but they are also afraid of being the last one. Okay, and 1 year ago, there were not many examples of companies using AI. And the fear was, wait a second, is this legal? So you got like general counsels that were usually blocking the usage of AI with some vague reasons, okay? And then you got some very forward-looking companies that took the risk, that they started using AI, really put their lawyers to look into the details, to check, okay. They got comfortable knowing that it was legal, and they took that risk of being the first one. Okay. So you get, for example, Coca-Cola, they made an ad using AI. Then you got in Europe, Vodafone using AI to make a very prominent ad. And that made people more comfortable. Okay. If Coca-Cola is using it, chances are this is actually, if Vodafone is using it, we should be able to use it. And very quickly, it switched from, wait a second, I don't want to be the first one, to I don't want to be the last one. Because if all my competitors are using it and are getting better results than me, why am I lagging? And that's where we are right now. Everybody wants to try it. Everybody. And it takes time because you need your marketing, your creatives. You need them to get used to it. Okay? Because it has pros and cons. You need some time to learn how to use this new tool. Okay, so now we get more and more companies that are just signing up, trying it, seeing the strong points and the weaknesses, and we are helping them to move forward.
Yeah. So are you a believer of AI is transforming and accelerating creativity instead of replacing?
Yeah, absolutely. This is, listen, there is a very clear parallel with photography. Okay, initially, photography, it was not seen as a creative process. People thought of photography like lacking creativity because you only took an image that already existed. You didn't create that image. It's not like painting where you actually have to stroke by stroke define the image. But of course, you need to take a decision into where am I going to place the camera? What do I want in my photo? What kind of angle? Those are very conscious decisions, okay? And that shaped the image. And there are interesting images, interesting photos, and non-interesting photos. And it's in the photographer to take an interesting photo. I always remember this when people say, hey, I mean, your photos are very good. You have a very good camera. Thank you. You have a very nice mouth. It's not the camera who's taking the photo. I am the one that is taking the photo. I'm making decisions. And the camera is the tool that I use to convert, to transform that decision into an image together with the reality that surrounds me. Yeah. And AI is similar. It's the tool that I use to convert the decisions that I take and my ideas that are unique to me. And that's the big difference with AI. Okay. It's like there's some, every single person, we are unique. We don't have, you cannot copy somebody. You can copy AI. You can post a GPT, you can move it to another GPU and run it again, and it will be fine. We cannot do that. Okay, we are unique. Our experiences are unique. Our decisions are unique. We are the ones here that are taking a decision, okay, I want this image because I find it interesting. Why? I don't know. Because of my experience, because of who I am, this is the thing that I want. And then you show it to somebody else, and wow, or not. And it's on you to find images that actually resonate with people. To me, AI is absolutely 100%. It's a tool. Some people will use it in a more skilled way than others because they have better ideas. And then they have more references. And it's something that you can nurture. You can study what makes a good image. You can see more examples. Yeah, and then you start having a better imagination, so to say. And you can travel and you can become a more interesting person. You can become somebody that is a bit more rounded to get better ideas. And to put those ideas into an image, a video, a film, whatever, okay? But AI is just something that is going to help you transform your ideas into that output format, image or video. Okay? It's not more magic than that.
Nice, nice perspective. I like it. Joaquin, are you concerned about your competitors?
Listen, the way I see it, the main problem that we face is people not knowing or not using AI. Okay? So actually, our competitors are helping us because they are making AI something that is more well-known. First of all, that's good. Okay, the more people that use, like if one of our competitors gets a deal to serve a particular customer, that is going to put pressure on other customers to also use AI to accelerate. And they are going to run their own process and they are going to probably choose other providers. We are very happy with the position that we have. We are from all the AI suites in the world, by far the one that has the most traffic. We are one of the most well-known ones, and we have a very good position into the B2B space. So I'm very happy where we are, but I think more competitors is going to make it better for everybody. And it's a little bit like when we started doing software in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, the number one issue was companies not knowing that they could automate something. Once they know or they accept that they can automate something, you're going to get more business and your competitors too. I think that the industry is going to be so huge that the fact that there are today 3-4 competitors is going to be relevant. There's going to be space for everybody.
I like that abundance mindset. So who's your main competitor? Who do you think is your main competitor?
We have competitors big and small. Okay, you have new startups, you have big players. So from big players, You can think of Adobe, again. You can think of Shutterstock and Getty. Those are two very prominent stock platforms. Some of them, they move very energetically and very fast into AI, maybe with a strategy that I don't agree fully, but it's their strategy. Some of them were slow to move into the new AI world, but each one of them do their own decisions. We are all trying to help people get the right image and the right video, and with different strategies. Then you get like the newcomers, startups that were AI native. So you have people like Midjourney, people like different use cases, like Midjourney, Scenario, Crea. You have, from the newcomers, you have Hicksfield, you have Kling, you have Ideogram, you have that many companies. I would say like there are like two different kind of AI-enabled creative companies. One of them is those who create their own model and use only their own model, okay? So that was the initial study of Adobe. They created Firefly and they only commercialize Firefly. That's the strategy of Midjourney, that's the strategy of Ideogram. And there are some other companies that use models from multiple providers, that's what we do, and offer a UI on top of those models. And that strategy, I think it's more future-proof. Because I think that to do what the user needs to do, you need to click together functionalities from different models. Limiting yourself to a single builder is a bit limiting. It's like trying to build an iPod, but you need to buy all the pieces from a single provider. Even the early iPods, it was hard drive from Samsung, but then the memory chip was from TSMC, was from a Chinese provider, probably from, or and the CPU was from maybe from Intel. I don't know. You know, like it got different pieces from different companies. Limiting yourself to sourcing everything from the same company, I think it limits the quality of the end product. I think you need to maximize. You need to think first of all from a functionality perspective, what makes sense for the user, and then find the best provider for whatever is needed instead of the other way around.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. Like, sitting on the other side, instead of saying, oh, it's my competitor and I have to get out of it. Instead, okay, what is good about the user? What is the right thing for the user? What actually is the important thing, because it's the person who's going to use your theme. Okay, so Joaquin, how do you balance innovation, like AI, with responsibility? Because you serve over millions of creators with Freepik. So how do you maintain that trust and fairness in this AI world?
I actually have a kind of contrarian view in terms of fairness and ethics in AI. Like, most people are afraid of AI being biased. I'm pointing out that we humans, we are really biased. Like I mentioned before, that there are three differences between AI and humans. And I think this is really important, because that's what creates a future for humans. If there was no difference, if AI keeps getting better and they can do absolutely everything that we do, what's in for a human? But I think there are fundamental differences. I mentioned before that we are unique in a way that an AI is not unique. Okay? But another one of the differences is that we never forget. We never forget on purpose a concrete data point. Okay, like we can forget things, but I cannot ask you tomorrow to forget about this interview and you will do this and forget it. It will not happen. So whatever we do here is leaving a memory in you that it will not go away. It will maybe get transformed over the years, but it will not go away. Okay. That means that we humans, we cannot do A/B tests. Okay, that's important. Because if I'm trying to test if you as a person, if you have a bias, I cannot do that with 100% reliability. Okay, if I want to test, imagine that you're in a position of power and I want to test if you have a bias for or against women, just to pick an example, okay? The only real way that I have to prove that you have a bias is to find or make up a male candidate, give it to you, says get your feedback on the candidate, and then make you forget about this male candidate and put a female candidate that is identical, but for the sex, and ask you for your opinion, okay? And I cannot do that with a human. Immediately you will see, wait a second, this is exactly the same as before, but it's a woman now. You will smell what's going on. And I cannot do that 1,000 times. It will not work, okay? So fundamentally, you cannot do A-B tests with humans, but you can with an AI. An AI is multimodal. It can see, it can listen, it can read, but multimodality is optional. So you can make it so that it only reads and it doesn't see. Something that you can do with an AI. You cannot do that with a human. So you can, in fact, run A-B tests on a machine and make sure that it's non-biased. We had this issue at the very beginning that AI models were generating nude women and not nude men. It was a bias of the models because of the underlying data set that we're using. How did we find out? Because we were able to test it. How can you know that a human illustrator has a tendency to create more nude women than nude men? You cannot know. But you can find the corpus of the work that he has created over the years, and you can measure it a little bit, and he can claim that that's what the client was asking. You cannot A/B test if that's true or not. Okay? But with an AI, we find out. We said, no, absolutely 100%, it's making more nude women than nude men. And subsequently, it's something that we can fix. We can say, okay, we need to look into the data set that is used for training the model. We need to counterweight the fact that in the data set, there are more female that are near than men. And I'm picking a controversial example a little bit on purpose, that we understand, okay, that it's true that they are biases and they were biases, but there's a huge advantage with AI that you can measure it and you can counterbalance it and you can make it statistically insignificant. And that's something that you cannot do with humans. So to me, in many cases, using AI is actually our best chance to get a non-biased process.
Okay, very interesting, actually, perspective. I think it's the first thing, and the first time I hear something like that. It's very interesting. As I know that you were kind of putting in a very kind of funny example, but I think it's, you say that you wanted to make it on purpose because then it's easier to understand. But yeah, I guess that with AI, since it's a language model, right? So it's easy to measure, way easier than with humans.
It's possible to measure. Yeah. With humans, it's not really possible. And I'm sure, listen, I'm not saying that this is perfect. I'm sure we will find more cases where the AI is biased. I'm 100% convinced of that. But I'm also sure that we'll be able to fix them. While with a human, what do you do? If I'm just making it up, but if 50% of the people, 80% of the people in a country has a particular bias against particular sex or race or whatever, what are your chances? How can you fix that? It's like you have no chances at all. So you put those people with the power to make a decision, like, should you get a bank credit, a bank loan, or not? If an AI is making a decision, then you can enforce fairness. And you can get pretty good. I don't know if we'll get like 100% absolutely identical. It will be probably impossible to mathematically prove that it's 100% fair. I'm pretty sure you can A/B test, and I don't know what, it's like 50.001% fair. And that's so much better than humans taking that decision.
Yeah. So, Joaquin, do you think that we are heading towards a war where everyone can be a designer? No. With AI?
No, I think we are going to a place where more people can be a designer, because you are removing a bottleneck, which was only artificial, which is somebody we are talking, imagine like traditional design, okay, traditional illustration where you are painting actually. You need fine motor skills. And to get those, you probably need to train for years since you are a kid to get those very good fine motor skills that makes you effortlessly get the painting that you want. Okay? Almost effortlessly. We are getting rid of that bottleneck. You still need to have interesting ideas. Because I mentioned before, I think you need to be an interesting person. If you are not an interesting person, you will not get something interesting out of the work. Okay. And that creation will not interest anybody because you're not telling anything that is worth listening to. And we see that. Okay. We see many people that create what is called AI slop. Like things that really is whatever. Okay. It's like you made zero effort and it shows. Okay. I have no interest in that. So I think it's actually removing a bottleneck to become a creative. I think it's good to remove that bottleneck. I think we are getting more to the pure essence of getting people that are creative and empowering them to make creative things that we find interesting.
Okay, Joaquin, I've got one last question for you. You've got a great career, I have to say, to be honest. Like, it's a long journey as well, and very entrepreneurial and with full of experiences and skills. But do you have any advice that you could share with young entrepreneurs who wants to pivot in their career? For example, something like you did, like, for example, you started with one company, right? With one small startup, doing similar thing that you're doing now, but in huge scale that you've been doing in the beginning. So what would you advise to those young entrepreneurs in that position that they're starting, but they would like to pivot and scale it? And yeah, what is your biggest take of all the lessons that you've learned and so far in your entrepreneurial journey?
We'll advise them. It depends on what stage you are in your company, okay? But if you have not yet started, I think that the best thing that you can do is to become more interesting. I think that it's just going to be so useful to travel around the world, to see places, to get into situations. It teaches you so much. Like, one of the key things is you need to break the rules. That doesn't mean to make things illegal, okay? But this break the rules is you need to do things differently to how you're supposed to do them. That's the basic definition of getting into a new industry. It's like you are using an angle that nobody used before, okay? So you need to learn to skip the queue. You need to start getting more comfortable just getting out of the queue and doing things differently. And I think that's super valuable skill in life. Most of the entrepreneurs, the successful entrepreneurs, they were, that I know, least. They had an angle. They had something for them. They were actually interesting. They were not just following orders. Okay, they were good. They had their own initiative and they were like pursuing their own initiative. And I think that's something that you can definitely cultivate. Of course, it's different. If you already created a company, then you are at the stage where you are pouring in who you are into your company and pouring in your vision. And at that stage, it's like, good luck, man. Keep pressing. You need a weird mixture. The problem with that is that they are not fixed rules. Whatever rule I give you, at some point it's like, no, break it and do something different. If I tell you, you need to be stubborn and just keep going, sometimes it's very useful to do that. But sometimes you actually have to change. It's like, you need to realize that it's not working and you need to quickly move. Another important principle, other than be interesting, is to keep moving. I think that's another essential one, is keep trying new things. When you have two choices, and one of them is just sit down and wait a little bit to see how things move, don't take that one. Take the one that involves movement, that involves you to do something. It's almost guaranteed that it's going to give you more information. It's going to teach you something. And very often it's the right answer.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.